When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 281. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. Baseball's back. And it's our first episode recording since spring training started. So that's a lot of fun. Obviously, we did put an episode out Friday. We had recorded before the Thursday Dodgers-Padres games. It's been fun to watch. There's too much to watch at once. Trying to watch college and pro ball, it's tough. But we're going to be there live in 4 days. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait.
I know, dude. I've been waiting for this so long. It's been so cold up here. Tried to go outside yesterday afternoon, even today, to play catch with my daughter, and it's just super cold, and the wind is just absolutely brutal. That's really what gets me, is the wind. Like, I can go outside and play catch in 30 degrees. It's just when it's windy and that wind chill factor just really gets to you, right down to your core, so it sucks. But she had a nice hitting clinic this morning. That was really fun to see her learning the ins and outs of hitting from one of the local D3 college teams up here, one of the female players, and then the coach, a couple coaches as well. So that was a lot of fun. That was a good way to start my Sunday with a little bit of live softball clinic there. And yeah, watching tons of baseball, combing through the box scores, Savant pages. It's really fun to get some live action again and have our feeds on Twitter just completely filled with, with live video, and that's a lot of fun. This guy has a new pitch. This guy's doing that. He dropped 30 pounds. He added 20 pounds. I love it. It's a fun time of year. But we're actually looking to the future, though. Now, we're all talking about the present. We're going to look to the future today, do a little prospect crystal ball episode, and project our top 25 prospects at this time next year. We've done similar episodes every year, I think, of this show's existence. And I think we did at least, I forget, either 2 years out or three. I want to say it was two, but we kind of figure with how quickly prospects are getting promoted these days and how much more aggressive teams are being with new incentivizations and whatnot, we're just going to go 1 year out. Because also, I looked through most of my top 15 or so. I think most of that's going to graduate, including my entire top 10. So we're going to go 1 year out, but we do have some differentials here on who we think might graduate, might not. We didn't 100% sync up the players because, again, we might differ on who we think graduates this year. It's going to be a really fun episode. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. All of our rankings are over there. We're both doing daily write-ups and a lot of other fun stuff on both of those platforms. And make sure to check out all the great stuff going on over at RotoBaller. RotoBaller has so many great articles, podcasts, tools, a lot of stuff to help you succeed this fantasy season. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package, even if it's not baseball. So go check that out over at rotoballer.com. All right, so we're going to do our top 25 for next year. Let's go like this time next year. All right, we're going to go five at a time, going from 25 down to number one. So, Chris, why don't you start us off with your projected 25 through 21 in 2025?
I like the idea of keeping these to the end because there's some fun names. I know the top names are a lot of fun, too. But this group is actually pretty fun, and a lot of guys that I think obviously are going to be big risers up rankings. And I've been very vocal about a lot of these guys. But here we go. 25 is Yoelin Cespedes, Boston Red Sox shortstop prospect. The reports I've gotten on Cespedes are just stellar. I think that he makes a big leap this year. He had a great DSL. See him stateside. I'll see him in Red Sox camp in mid-March. So I'm looking forward to seeing the minor league side of things too. We'll get major league this week, but then minor league will be down there for that too. So I think Cespedes makes a big rise. And that was my 25th spot. I want a fun, like long shot name. And that was Cespedes for me. Then followed by Dylan Beavers at 24. And we can talk a little bit about him if you want, but Dylan Beavers made some major strides last year and has some really good power speed traits that I like. And I think that he just gets so underhyped because of how good that system is in Baltimore. But I think this may be the year that he finally gets the respect that he deserves with some of those guys graduating. Eduardo Quintero, outfielder with the Los Angeles Dodgers at 23. Cooper Pratt, another guy I've been very vocal about for a long time at 22. And Rainer Arias at 21. So these are a lot of like upside names, upside targets in drafts, but guys that I think will really move up. So who is your 25 to 21?
Yeah, as I mentioned before we started recording, I was debating putting Cespedes there too. Yeah, everything I've heard is very glowing on him. Some scouts have said he's the best Red Sox prospect to go through the DSL since Rafael Devers, which is saying something. Okay, had a lot of fun upside players come through. So very high, a lot of buzz on him at a Red Sox camp, as you mentioned. So almost put him in. I'm going Leo DeVries at 25, Harry Ford at 24, Mac Horvath. I've been planting my flag on Mac Horvath, so why stop now? Got him at 23, Chase Burns, who's probably going to be the number one pitcher out of this draft class. At least that's what it's looking like for now. Absolutely dominant at 22. And another pitcher, Robbie Snelling, who I believe is very underrated right now at 21. So a couple of pitchers there. For me, I love the Beavers pick from you too, Chris. And Quintero's one. I considered both Quintero and Beavers. Quintero is the unknown. So not unknown. When people talk about the top Dodgers prospects, most people go to Vargas, and rightfully so, or Josue de Paula, But Quintero is a very well-rounded player. Doesn't have any one of those tools that really sticks out to you, but he can do a lot of good across the board. So, yeah, I was very close to putting him in here. But let's go to Beavers for you, because obviously Beavers, as you mentioned, very intriguing power-speed blend. There's been some questions about the hit tool, but having him in Baltimore's org, obviously, can only help him. Yeah, why don't you go talk a little bit about Dylan Beavers there?
Well, I thought that Beavers really flew under the radar this year. He always had the contact question marks, and the contact rate jumped significantly. In 2022, he ran 75% contact rate. This year, he ran an 81% contact rate. He hits the ball hard. He has some sneaky speed, in my opinion. And this is just the prospect you look at, and you're like, okay, he looks the part. He's 6'4". He's 205. There's easy plus power, in my opinion. He did steal 27 bases last year, so that's all you look at. It's okay, why didn't he hit more home runs? He hit 11 home runs last year, which is not like you question, like, where's the power at with Beavers? But it's there. He hits the ball really hard. It's not even a lift issue either. Like, he doesn't hit the ball on the ground all that often. He had a 34% ground ball rate in high A and 32 in double A. So it's really, those are fine numbers, but he's hit so many line drives. And I don't think that hurts him at all. I really don't. There was a lot of doubles, a lot of extra base hits last year. He had 6 triples to add to those 11 home runs. And then he had 37 doubles too. So a ton of extra base hits in this profile. And I just really believe that Beavers is going to be somebody that hasn't caught on yet, but then people are going to come around and they're like, wow, this guy may actually be legit. And I think it's just because of the fact that you look at the profile, okay, he's good, but look at all these other really good guys in the Orioles system. He doesn't chase at all. Like, he's going to run super high OBPs. So if you're in an OBP format, like, I think that's a huge boost too, because his chase rates were like some of the best in the minors, which awesome stuff there. So I just think the profile is well-rounded enough where you feel comfortable saying, I think that Beavers is just a guy that's way better than the Fangraphs page says. And I think he's somebody that really takes off this year that I'm excited to watch.
Yeah, I absolutely am too. And someone that I didn't have a chance to see near the end of last season when he got to double A, but I think he starts again at that double A, at least for a little bit. He probably won't be in double A for much longer because he did hit well. Didn't really have, you know, a ton of power at double A last year. He only hit 2 home runs in 34 games, but did hit 321 with a 417 OBP while keeping the K rate in check. And yeah, I think he's done. That was the question on him, was where would the hit tool be at? Where would the contact skills be? Where would the approach be coming out of California? But I think he's done a great job of proving, not the doubters, but proving that he's a better pure hitter than most gave him credit for. If you look at last year, he had a 13.3% walk rate in 119 games between high A and double A, and only struck out 22% of the time. Hit 288 with a 383 OBP, 27 steals, 11 home runs, but 35 doubles. Yeah, I think you start seeing more of those doubles turn into home runs. So, yeah, I looked at him, too. If we had added, like, 5 more, I think Beavers would have been in there for me. So I'm pretty excited to hopefully see him. I'd see how the schedule lines up, but hopefully I can get some live looks at him early in the season before he heads off to AAA here. But let's keep it right there with Baltimore. And obviously, I've been super high on Horvath. I think power-speed blend is massive with Mac Horvath. We saw that in his final 2 years at North Carolina, and then he hit very well after the draft last year down in single A. Now, this is a guy who had 42 home runs and 44 steals in those 123 games combined between 2022 and 2023. And similarly to Beavers, there were some contact skills that were questioned with Horvath, and I think those concerns are still there. I don't think he's going to hit 300 or anything, but this is a guy that if he can just get a hit around 260, and I think he can. I think the contact skills are there. The quality of contact is there and the speed. So I think he'll probably run a little bit of a higher BABIP. Swing decisions are, they're not bad. It's not like there's a ton of swing and miss in the profile. You look at, he had 43 walks to 61 Ks in last spring with North Carolina, 19 walks, 26 Ks in 22 games in the minor leagues after the draft. So even if he's a fringe hitter, 260-ish guy, the upside is 25-25 guy. And where he ends up on the diamond, that's the question. He's played some second, some third, some outfield. Obviously, there's not a lot of glaring holes for Baltimore, but I think Matt Horvath is being slept on a little bit, and this is a guy that's I think has all the upside in the world for fantasy purposes. So, yeah, I'm gonna keep beating the Horvath drum here. I've been very vocal about him. So, Chris, I wanted to get your thoughts on Horvath. Let's keep the Baltimore train rolling here. What are your thoughts on Horvath, and was he close to making a list like this for you?
Yeah, I think that he certainly has that kind of profile you look at and you really believe could make a lot of noise. And I think there's that chance that Horvath does really move up boards. And, you know, you look at what he did in college and you know, he put up big power and speed numbers, but the underlying data was really good on him too. One of the best chase rates in college baseball last year, chased at 15% clip, made contact at an 80% rate. So those are both like firmly plus, and those things don't really change all that much when you get to pro ball. Maybe a little less chase or a little more chase because pitchers are more competitive. You're going to get more competitive pitches game in, game out. But the power was really good too. And obviously you see some regression from metal to wood, but we're looking at a 93-mile-an-hour average EV, which is stellar. And for reference, just because he's sitting on the row beside him that I'm looking at, which Travis Bazzano, who's going to be one of the top picks this summer, had a 89-mile-an-hour average EV last year. Horvath had Bazzano there by a decent margin. Now, their ninth percentiles were very close. Bazzano actually edged him out 106 to 105.5, but still solid numbers. I think Horvath strikes me as a guy that's above average across the board, like a bunch of 55s, which is no knock at all. I actually think that's a compliment that you do a lot of things well. So I'm really interested to see like how aggressive they get with this college-type bat. But I am a fan of Horvath and think that he's still somebody that's still really underrated.
Yeah, definitely agree there. All right, let's go to our next set here, 20 through 16. For me, I got Sebastian Walcott in the 20 spot, Andrew Painter, 19, 18 is Jet Williams, who I was very much on the fence. I think there's a chance he graduates, but the Mets got a lot of guys that are all in the similar range of kind of development and ETA, Gilbert, Acuna, et cetera. So I lean towards including him here, even though there's a chance he might get over 130 at bats. Emmanuel Rodriguez at 17 and Felnin Celestin at 16. Chris, who you got there 20 through 16?
All right. So I have Adio Amador, who's already sitting in this range, and I don't think gets enough at bats to graduate. I struggled with where to put him because you already have him top 25 and all these guys are graduating, but Amador is just not like the huge, like flashy type player. I think he's got the best hit tool in the minors and the contact rates back that like best contact hitter there is, but like, where's the power and speed fall? So I do think he retains that spot, but doesn't move up a ton. I have Jet Williams at 19, Leo DeVries at 18, Robert Kalas at 17 and Cooper Pratt at 16.
Robert Kalas is a fun one, too. Obviously, Rocky's got a few of those guys right now, those lower minors guys that could really pop this year, and Kalas is one of those for sure. And we both have Jet Williams there, and I have him 18, you have him 19. I think there's a pretty split camp right now in terms of prospect rankings on Jet, and I see why. I think a lot of that surrounds where does the power wind up. Is obviously, Jet Williams, the on-base abilities are elite. And we saw that this year he was one of, was it four teenagers to have 100 walks this year? He had 104 walks to 118 strikeouts. This was in 121 games, 534 plate appearances, most of which were in low A and high A. Did get a cup of coffee with double A Binghamton end of the year as an 18-year-old. Didn't really do much with it, but it just shows like how advanced of a bat he was. And hit 263 with a 425 OBP, 451 slug. You know, showed a little bit of power, 22 doubles, 8 triples, 13 home runs. Stole 45 bags, only got caught 7 times. Obviously a plus runner, efficient runner. That's great. So we know he's a get on base. Probably be a guy that hits first, second in a lineup and steal bags. But is he a 10-homer guy? Is he 15? Can he get up in the upper teens and maybe a foot over 20 at peak. I think that's really the question here with Williams. But I think even if he's able to split all that and go 15, which I think is a fair, you know, realistic number for him, he's shown a little bit of pop. He's not really that big. But if he's 15 home runs, hitting 260, 270, high OBP, 30-plus steals, I think that's still, you know, pretty valuable overall, and especially in OBP formats, he gets a nice boost there. Yeah, I already have him in this range. Similar to what you were saying about Amador, I don't think he's going to move up a ton from here, but I think there's definitely the skill sets to stick as a top 20 guy for me.
Yeah, looking at Jet, I do think that he is the outlier that makes it at his size. Like, most 5'6" guys just don't make it as professional baseball players. I understand there's Jose Altuve. I understand there's Mookie Betts, who is bigger than that. But it's just not the case for most. But I do think Jet is that outlier that makes it. Do I think he's going to be like the stud fantasy type? Probably not. But do I believe that he's going to be a really solid contributor? I do. The OBP skills are there. The power is good enough. I think he's a 12 to 15 home run bat that maybe peaks at 18 in a season, but he's going to steal bases. Like, he's so quick. He gets such good jumps on the base pass. I do think he's going to be a viable option. He's a hard out. Like, he's somebody that's hard for pitchers to get out. So I really do believe in Jet, and I don't think he gets up and plays enough to graduate. Time will tell, but I do believe that he's still prospect eligible next year and in a top 20 spot for sure.
Yeah, so I think there's a chance that he does, but he's another one that I hope I get to see a good amount this year, because, you know, like I said, got that cup of coffee with Binghamton last year, six games under the season. So probably one that does have still probably at least a couple of months in AA. I can't imagine they push in the AAA super early this season. And Binghamton's a team that we play a good amount here. I'm looking at the schedule. Let's see. Okay, so they have a six-game set with New Hampshire end of April, so I can go see him there. It's about a two-hour or so drive for me. Let's see if they come to Portland. Yeah, then they have second week of May, six-game set here in Portland, 7th through the 12th. Hopefully I get some looks at him and maybe a couple other guys, and out of all those fun Mets prospects, we'll see who else is there with him in AA. Probably Clifford, probably not. I think Acuna and Gilbert will be AAA, but
yeah.
But all right, who else in this range here really sticks out? We do have, who else do we both have so far? I think that's it. So we both have Leo DeVries so far. That's another name we both have so far in this kind of the first 10 names that we talked about here. And obviously we talked about him as a kind of a breakout guy. And yeah, obviously one of the bigger names, maybe the biggest name, at least in that discussion from this, you know, past draft class. And then we both had him the highest ranked international guy. You take out the Imanagas and the Yamamotos in FYPD rankings this past offseason. How high do you think is the – obviously, we both have him top 25 for next year, but he's not going to graduate next year, so we could probably do this episode next offseason, and he'd be on there again for the following year. What do you think is just like the true ceiling for him, Chris? Do you think this is a guy that maybe is a top five prospect at some point?
I do. Remember all the hype when Jason Dominguez came over, and – I think DeVries can be every bit of the player that Dominguez is and was at the time. But I think that just with the last few classes, and I will say that last year's international class, 2023, was much better. But compared to the pandemic, we had some rough classes and a lot of just bus types per se that were really high ranked. And then just, and so I think it scared people to rank these guys too high. But when I look at Leo DeVries, it's, for me, I'm already seeing a top 50 prospect. He has all the intangibles. He's got the frame. Like, I really do think there's a chance that we're talking like a true, like maybe potential like five category type player for fantasy purposes. And the upside is just tremendous. And it's the kind of shot you want to take and bet on, because if this guy was pre-pandemic international signee, he'd probably be going like top three in the FYPD. I know it's a stat class, so maybe like fourth or fifth, but still, like, the fact that he's so much lower regarded per se is really interesting to me. So I think that the I don't know. The ceiling's so high here. I do think a top five prospect is certainly something that could happen.
Yeah, I definitely think that upside is there. And yeah, it's funny how over the last couple of years, we've really taken a more cautious approach with these guys. And I see why, and I've done so myself. I think in the past, I got burned too much by ranking these type of guys too high. Especially, I keep looking back to 2019. And obviously, Jason has worked out. For most people, and myself included, 2 and 3 for international guys from that class were Eric Pena with the Kansas City Royals and blanking Chris, the Oakland shortstop.
Yeah, Robert Poisson.
Poisson, thank you. I was complete brain cramp. I actually still follow him on Instagram. I realized that the other day, one of his things came up in my feed. I barely ever on Instagram, but I saw that. I was like, oh, yeah, Robert Poisson, remember him? But yeah, those guys are just not working. I think that was like the final straw with me. I'm like, yeah, obviously you can get guys that pop. And obviously Jackson Chirio was a fairly highly ranked international guy in that class, but not like one of like the top 3 or 4. And now he's popped into being a potential superstar. But it goes both ways. I think that class of 2019 and a couple of those guys that like everyone missed on. And that kind of caused me like I go a little more cautious. So most of the top guys, like I had DeVries, what, 12th-ish, give or take, a spot either way in my FOPD rankings this year, just behind guys like Cole Emerson and guys like that. But maybe I should rank him a little higher because I'm very high on DeVries, and I think he's going to be a guy that just absolutely skyrockets up prospect rankings this year. All right, let's go into our next set here. 15 through recap so far, 25 through 16 for me was Leo DeVries, Harry Ford, Matt Horvath, Chase Burns, Robbie Snelling, Sebastian Walcott, Andrew Painter, Jet Williams, Emmanuel Rodriguez, and Felman Celestin. For Chris, Yoelan Cespedes, Dylan Beavers, Eduardo Quintero, Cooper Pratt, Rainer Arias, Adiel Amador, Jet Williams, Leo DeVries, Robert Kalas, and Cooper Pratt. Chris, you got 15 through 11.
All right, so I have Andrew Painter at 15. Obviously, we know he won't pitch this year. And typically, I don't put pitching prospects this high. If you followed my ranking sets for fantasy, I'm more conservative with pitching prospects. But I do think that Andrew Painter is a special case. This is another guy that I will mention briefly when we get to the end of the set. But Painter at 15, Felden Selston at 14, Max Clark 13, Emmanuel Rodriguez at 12, and Chase Burns. We're hitting our first draftee from the summer. Chase Burns at 11.
Yeah, Burns, like that first start from Burns was absolutely nasty. What do you have, like 12? We have 12 Ks in 5 innings or something like that. Absolutely filthy. Easily the top arm from this class, as we both have mentioned so far. For me, I got Noble Meyer at 15, Max Clark 14, Roderick Arias 13, Travis Bezzana 12, and Paul Skeens at 11. Now, people aren't going to like that. More so because I still have him on this list, not that I have him 11, but I'm just sticking to the fact that I just don't think he's going to exceed 50 innings pitches here. I think he gets close, like 35, 40, 45. And yeah, there's absolutely a chance that he, you know, gets caught up earlier than I'm expecting and he exceeds that. I just don't think he's going to. There's no real need for Pittsburgh to push him, especially if he was going to be ready like now or close to now. Yeah, bring him up now. But I think they more so want him, that big first push for him being 2025. Maybe he's in one of the front runners for Rookie of the Year in the National League next year. I still have him here. And then Noble Meyer for me too. I'm right with Chris with the fact that I don't usually rank pitching prospects so high, but I have in this 25, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Which isn't like a ton. Noble Meyer is a name that I am absolutely enamored with. I think he's going to make a massive jump up. But yeah, you and I both have Painter top 20, Chris. And I had him jumping back up my rankings a little bit this past update because people ask me why. But the closer we get to Painter returning, the higher his rank's going to be, the higher his price is going to be. It's probably at the lowest you'll get it right now. You think that's fair to say? Like right now, it's probably the low point of Painter's value. If you wait a month, 3 months, 6 months, next offseason, it's only going to go exponentially higher as he gets closer to returning to action.
Yeah, 100%. It's the close, and that's the thing, the closer he is to returning, the just more it's going to cost you. So when I look at the profile, it's okay. We know this guy can be an ace. We've seen it. But his stock just is so interesting. We know he's not going to pitch this year. So I'm trading for him right now because I know that the closer we get to him returning, there will be more talk. There will be more hype. And then the cost is going to go up. But right now, the out of sight, out of mind thing is totally the case here. And so you can get him at a reasonable cost, in my opinion, and not break the bank.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, Painter is a guy that, let's say the injury never happened and he debuted. This guy that was maybe going to debut at a spring training or shortly thereafter last year before the injury happened. Let's say that just wipe the injury out, never happened. He's probably being talked about in the same tier as Yuri, G-Rod, Bobby Miller is now. Like, that's the type of talent we're talking about with Painter. So, yeah, if you want to go try to draft a potential or draft a trade for a potential future ace at non-ace price tag, yeah, right now is the time to go get a guy like Andrew Painter. And we both have Max Clark here in the top 15. We both have Emmanuel Rodriguez in the top 20. You have him 12. I have him 17. He's another one, Chris. I've been up and down with my long-term thought process on a guy like Emmanuel Rodriguez. Obviously, the talent's there. There's a reason why I have him here, but he's one of the ones where is he going to have that big value gap between average and OBP formats? Because right now, I think the answer to that is yes. He's an elite OBP guy. There's zero doubt about that. He has a 413 career OBP through his first 807 plate appearances, was 400 on the dot last year as a 20-year-old in high A, added 16 home runs, 20 steals in 99 games. There's that big time power there. If he really starts, you know, being more aggressive and hunting out those pitches for him to drive, this is a 30 homer bat. Solid athleticism as well. At least a guy that'll get you 15 steals or so. But where is the average at? So if you play in a league, the standard 5x5 with average, is he, you know, does he get dinged a little bit because he's below average contact? That's what I'm wondering right now, Chris. So, I know, what's your thought process on E-Rod long-term here?
I think the biggest issue is that he just doesn't swing the bat. When you look at the profile and the swing rates, okay, one of the lowest swing rates in the minor leagues. And that's a concern himself because he's putting himself in bad situations in late in counts. And so the strikeout rates are high. The contact rate's not great. 70% last year is not what you want, but to me, the swing rate's more concerning. Just swing the bat. Get it off your shoulder, kid, because when you make contact, you do damage. I want to see him be more aggressive early in counts. So I do think Rodriguez obviously plays way up in an OBP format. But when we look at average format, what kind of batting average does he give you? And obviously, I think that's still a question that's to be determined. I would not be shocked if the batting average did go up after if he swung earlier in counts. Like, I think that's the biggest thing, he's just not getting good pitches to hit because he's taking pitches. And then he's getting in these two strike counts. Guess what? At that point, you got to swing. And so he's striking out. Ultimately, I do believe that the upside's just so tremendous here with power. He's a good athlete. He's going to give you some speed. So I want to bet on that. But I also want to see more changes in the profile of him just being a little more aggressive. So I don't know. It could go either way here, and I'm just going to hope that it goes the direction that I think it will and that he will continue to move up.
I hope so because, yeah, there's plenty of upside here, and he's been pretty young for every level and performed pretty well at those levels. You look at through 183 games over three seasons, got 35 home runs, 40 steals, and a 21.3% walk rate. Yeah, he's just too passive. We talked about that before with Trent Grisham, or Trent, back in that day, he was Trent Clark. But he was like the poster boy for that, right? At least when you and I were getting into prospects and being in the industry, he was a poster boy back then. And you saw he made those adjustments, got a little bit more aggressive, and took off for a couple of years. And since then, his career has gone south for the most part. But yeah, there is such a thing as being too aggressive. And yeah, 21, it's great that I'd rather see a guy walk more than have a high K rate. But yeah, in this case, he's too passive. You mentioned that he's one of the lowest swing rate guys in all of baseball, and the power's there. So I want to see him try to tap into that a bit more for sure. Let's go on to before we do, we both had Max Clark here. If I have to mention him, yeah, Max Clark here in our top 15. And you know, I think when 2023 FYPD rankings started, I'd say more than half had Clark ahead of Jenkins. That has since switched. Generally, I think initial rankings had more so Cruz over Langford too. So those have obviously adjusted a bit here. But I think people are starting to go too low on a guy like Max Clark, who is still a phenomenal athlete. He's good defender, plus or better speed, probably even maybe double plus speed, and has that power projection in the frame there. We'll see where he ends up at on that spectrum. But there's still a lot of talent here. And I think people are overreacting way too much to the fact that his 23 games, that was it, 23 games between Complex and Low A Lakeland weren't even bad. He hit 224, but he had a 383 OBP, nearly as many walks as strikeouts. But the fact that Jenkins, who he was being compared to, was absolutely dominant in his time after the draft, he's moved way up rankings. I think right now is actually a good buying opportunity for Clark. And I think you'll probably agree with that, as we both have him as a top 15 guy next year.
Yeah, it's really interesting, like, what's happened with Max Clark. Like, he was shoo-in to be like one of the best prep prospects in this class. And I know he still is, but as he didn't get drafted first overall, like some thought, or there were other guys that were like just more flashy than him, and the debut was just okay. Like, all those things put him in a weird spot, I think, but the talent's still there. Clark has five tool upside and potential. I think the biggest question is the power, but I think that he figures that out. He's a kid that works hard. He puts in the work in the weight room. Like, he's dedicated to the craft. He makes contact. He's got speed. So I'm believing that he makes this work and ultimately really takes off this year. People wonder how he fell so far in FYPDs, ends up being a steal of FYPD drafts. So yeah, I'm rather in on him, and I think he soars back up boards.
Yeah, and if you're looking for like just the upside play in your FYPDs, I wouldn't take him top five, but if you're in that 6-7 range, absolutely would look to him there. Obviously, Langford is my locked in one, then you got Yamamoto and Cruz 2-3, and then Jenkins Shaw are kind of like the 4-5 for me. But after that, like, he's, if I had pick six and I was looking for more upside, I mean, Wilkins and play for me there. Cole Emerson's jumped way up and he's in that range too. But yeah, I would definitely always consider Matt Clark there, because I still think there's a lot of talent and he's being dropped too low in the perceived value just because of a lackluster but not bad 23 games after the draft. All right, let's get into our top 10 now. Going 10 through 6. For me, that's Jackson Jobe at 10, who's my number one pitcher on this board. And another guy like Jet, I was very on the fence about if he would graduate or not. I'm still 50-50 on him, but I was more sure of it a few months ago. But now they've had Jack Flaherty and Kenta Maeda. So I'm like, maybe they're going to give him more time in the upper minors than I initially thought. So now I'm leaning like 60-40 to him not exceeding 50 innings pitch. He'll still debut for sure, but not over 50, I think, now. So he's at 10 for me. Cole Emerson at 9. Lazaro Montez, and I'm beast, at 8. Joandre Vargas at 7. And my highest current 2024 draftee, Nick Kurtz, at 6. Chris, who you got 10 through 6?
All right, so I have Roderick Arias at 10. I have Joandre Vargas at 9. Nick Kurtz at 8. Travis Bazzana at 7, and Samuel Basalo at 6.
All right, so Roderick Arias, name that we both have here. I have him 13. U of M 10. And we're starting to see, you know, a bit more similar names here as we get closer to one. And Roderick Arias is a guy that I firmly believe would already be at least top 50, maybe even pushing top 25 if he didn't have that hand injury that you never have a good time to get injured, obviously, but he was really taking off at his last, was it 18 games before that injury? Because he had five hits his first three games at the complex level. Then he went on a six-game hitless streak. But then his final 18 games was slashing .344, .488, .625 with five home runs, 19 walks, and 18 strikeouts. Now, a guy that's just could be above average to plus across the board. We'll see if he sticks a shortstop. I think he could, but obviously they already have Anthony Volpe there. So we'll see where he ends up long-term. But the all-around offensive profile is very enticing. And your Yankees are a pretty good system for player development, especially on the hitting side or both sides. But I think they're probably a top 10 player development organization right now. So I like the system he's in. 19 years old, probably gets the bump up to low A, you know, what either start the season or shortly thereafter. But yeah, I think Arias is due for a massive breakout and rise up rankings this year.
Yeah, he has all the tools, he's got the intangibles. I think that there's still a buying window, even though I would say the buy window was after the DSL when he struggled, but he didn't even really struggle that bad. It was just like the expectations were such through the roof with him. But yeah, I think that you look at Roderick Arias and you see someone that like firmly was breaking out last year. He had the hand surgery that sucked, but it was what it was. But when he came stateside, he put up really good numbers. His ninth percentile exit velocity was already above MLB average at 18. Contact skills improved last year. The chase rate went down. He probably starts the year in single A, a chance to move through the system pretty quick. And I think that there's like true five tool potential here. So I am buying Roderick Arias where I can.
I hate that I like so many Yankees prospects right now. There's a lot of fun names in that system. For sure. There always seems to be too. They always have all those fun, young, buzzy guys. And Cantor Delgado was one last year that got a lot of buzz. Not on this level, obviously, but always seem to have a lot of the fun guys. They usually do well in the international market, especially in getting these guys. Yeah, definitely like him a lot. A guy we both have here in this range, Nick Kurtz, the first baseman from Wake Forest, kind of one of the front runners to be number one FYPD, maybe a top overall pick in the 2024 draft. Hasn't set the world on fire through the first week or so of the collegiate season, but man, Chris, like the upside for Kurtz, he's a good defender on top of it all, massive power from the left side of the plate. What do you think we're looking at here with Nick Kurtz long term?
Actually, like the profile and data are like pretty similar to Dylan Cruz, like when you look at everything underlying, which is pretty interesting. It's a very low chase rate. Sub 15% chase rate, 80% contact, 84% zone. Average EV was 93 last year with a ninth of 109, topped out at 115. Like just absurdly good hard hit rates. And he moves really well too. That's the interesting thing. Like you watch him run and like, okay, this guy can leg out some doubles and turn some hits that probably should have been singles into doubles from that standpoint. So I look at Kurtz and it's really not like that dissimilar to what Dylan Cruz is at the plate. So obviously at first base is a little different. There's a little more pressure on the bat, but yeah, I think that he's certainly somebody that deserving to be a top 10 prospect, like depending on who graduates, but somebody that I'm really in on. And I think that he will probably be top three pick. And yeah, maybe he goes to Colorado. That would be wild.
Oh my Lord.
But
yes.
There's a lot of good landing spots, actually, in the top. Cincinnati would be a great landing spot, too, for him. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's be fun to follow.
Can we just speak that into existence? I don't even care. Colorado or Cincinnati, I bat like Nick Kurtz in one of those two parks. Whew.
Yeah.
Getting a little hot and bothered just thinking about it right now. Look at what he did. Like I said, he hasn't had the greatest start to the season. Hasn't been bad either. But look at what he did last year for Wake Forest. 56 games, 265 plate appearances. slash 353, 527, 784, 63 walks to only 50 strikeouts and 24 home runs and added five steals too. So maybe he's a guy that at least adds maybe a handful of steals a year. Just gives you a little something there. And potential plus bat with double plus power. Absolutely. Like he's, you look at him and he's basically what you think about when you think of this, like that big, strong, power hitting first baseman. He's 6'5", 235, 240, but like a good 235, 240, very strong, tree trunks for legs. He can just absolutely put a charge into the ball. So yeah, I'm very excited for Nick Kurtz. As of now, he's my number one for FYPD. Obviously we got plenty of baseball left to be played, and there's a lot of, you know, good guys in this draft class, a lot of good collegiate bats as well. We'll see. But yeah, he's the front runner to go 1-1 in FYPDs next year. And yeah, I think he's a big guy that's moving up into top 10 prospect rankings pretty dang quick. You know, Joindre Vargas is a name we also both have here in the top 10. We already talked about him last episode before. Recently, we went into him, so we'll skip over him here. But I want to get your take on someone. I have a Lazaro Montez, you know, and I admit I'm very high on Montez. I think he has 40 home runs in the bat, and we'll see where, if he's a power first bat, he's always going to be power first, but I'm talking about like if he's going to provide a solid average, basically what I'm trying to say here. But so far, he's been hitting very well in the minor leagues last year in 70 games, almost split between complex and low A. 303, 440, 560 walks to 76 strikeouts, 19 doubles, 13 home runs. He is another guy that has that big, strong. He's 6'3", 210. That's not accurate whatsoever at all. He's probably, if I had to guess, 6'4", 6'5", 220, 230 at this point. Hard to say, but definitely bigger than that and huge power. But Chris, you know, you don't have him top 25. Just want to get your thoughts here on Lazaro Montez long-term.
I'm very conservative on him because the contact skills just haven't been there. And when you look at the contact rates and 65, 66% at low levels, gives me major pause because this kind of hitter just doesn't magically make more contact as he moves up levels. I know the strikeout rates have been in check so far. Like last year, the numbers were all right. He struck out 76 times in 302 plate appearances, so 25%. So that's not bad. And the strikeout rate was actually better in single A, but the contact skills were worse and they regressed all year. The batting average is not reflective of the kind of hitter he is. I think people are reading way too much into that. And I've seen some pretty egregious takes on social media about the kind of like hitter that he is. But I know that there can be improvement, but for a guy that this is this big with long levers and he's really only getting bigger, I just have severe worries about the contact skills long-term, especially as we see him move up levels. So that number just sticking in my head of just knowing how poor the contact rate was just gives me a little more pause. And I think that if we projected a top 50 for going into next year, then I'm probably ranking him like 40th or so, just because I need to see improvements with the contact rate. I don't really believe, obviously I believe in the power. The power is absurd. You probably throw 70 on the power, but I don't think it matters too much if you can't make contact.
Yeah. And obviously that's the big question. And that's like why I felt uneasy putting him there at 8. I'm just hoping that he can, you know, like you said, he doesn't have a ton of swing and miss in this game. Yeah, the K rate's not great, but it's not terrible either. And, you know, can draw a walk. So I'm hoping he can at least get the contact skills to the point where if he's just in the vicinity of 70%, which might be asking a lot, but if he's there in that power, high OBP guy, he probably always have a little bit more value in OBP formats than average. But if he can just get the contact skills close to 70%, I think he could be okay given his power and ability to work the count. So that's what I'm hoping there. But yeah, I'm probably way too high with having him at 8, but I love Montez a lot.
A lot of people do. He's very popular.
Yeah, and he had that video of him the other day. This, first of all, I love the video where it's from, it looks like the back of the opposite side batter's box, like down low. So you get that beautiful angle of this, like the ball launching off the bat out to right field. I love that angle. Obviously, it's hard to do outside of backfields, but can't do that in games. but I love that angle and just seeing him just launch that ball. Whew, that was a fun video.
Yeah.
So glad to have baseball back in my timeline. That's just a long off season without any new video, but all right, we're reaching the top five now. It's gonna be fun. Chris, so you got 5 through 1.
All right. So I have Ethan Salas at 5, maybe asking a lot of a catcher, but the data was so good last year as a 16, 17 year old. It's hard to not see him improving. So he's one that I like. The contact skills were there. The power was there. Just everything across the board. So I have Roman Anthony at 4. I have Walker Jenkins at 3. I have Colt Emerson at 2. And this one I debated pretty heavily because I don't know if he graduates or not, but I am leaning towards him not graduating. That's Dylan Cruz coming in at 1.
Yeah, I was very much on the fence on whether Cruz graduates as well. I think he does. I think it's going to be close. I mean, I think it's going to be within 50, not even 50, like 25 spots at bats either way. If he does go over, it's probably by a ton. But, though maybe they do push him. Washington has pushed him before, or pushed the top prospects before. It's not really a whole lot in front of him. So maybe they do surprise us and push him up in like June or July. We'll see. But I do lean towards him graduating, so I do not have him in my top five. My top five, at 5, I tweeted about him an hour or two before we hit record. I got Brock Wilken at 5. I'm fully on board the Brock Wilken train here. I tweeted out that I think we're talking about him next offseason, similarly to how we're talking about Junior Caminero this offseason. That's how high I am on Wilken. He's got easy double plus power. This could be a 35-40 home run bat, and the improvements he made, you know, walk rate, K rate, contact skills, you know, over the last 12 plus months, very encouraging. And those, you saw him, those, a lot of those stuck after the draft in the low minors after. So I have him at 5. I got Sammy Basalo at 4. So Basalo top 6 for both of us. And this is one that I really debated because you have him at 20. And yeah, it's hard to rank this guy sometimes, but I have Adiel Amador at 3. Like you mentioned, Chris, one of the best hit tools in the minors, and maybe he is the new kind of hit tool king once Jackson Holliday graduates early this season. And I think there's enough power speed, plus maybe he's only 50 power speed. That's probably fair. But I think he does have a little bit more power than people admit that he has, or people think that he has. So I think given what he does have for power speed and the fact that you've got Coors Field, the high floor with the elite approach and the elite contact skills, I don't think pushing 20-20 is out of the question at Coors Field. Maybe it's a little odd to see a guy with his profile at 3, but I think it fits. And then I have Roman Anthony at 2. I think the ascension is just going to continue in 2024. And you saw him start to really tap into the sexy fantasy skills, so to speak, last year as the season progressed. So I think you really see those come to the forefront this year. And then I got Walker Jenkins at 1. He was the first guy I thought of. I already have him top 15, and all the upside in the world for him. Very advanced hitter, powers there, solid athlete with some speed as well. So I think he's the new 1 this time next year. So yeah, that's a fun. Those are fun 25s right there. A couple more players to talk about here before we get out of here. Colt Emerson, obviously one of the buzzier names in all of the minor leagues right now, Chris. You know, I had him 9. You pushed him all the way up to 2. What are you seeing from Emerson that made you push him all the way up to that 2 spot?
Well, really, it was just how much he popped off when he debuted last year. The data on him was pretty insane across the board. Obviously, he came up and he slashed 374, 496, 550, but he was only 17 on draft day. He's already really advanced and mature. Very good contact rates. It was an 80% overall contact, 86% in zone, 20% chase rate. The average EV was 89. The ninth percentile was 105. He also clocked a 6.7 60-yard dash, which is plus speed. And then I listened to Jerry DePoto talk about him on Joe Doyle's podcast, and it was like DePoto just absolutely raved about him, like how advanced he was, like how spoiled they were to get him where they did in the draft. And to listen to him talk about him, it's just like, man, this guy, And I know, like, GMs are obviously going to pump their players, but, like, everything backs it. Like, it's 100% correct. Like, we've seen it over and over. And even though it's a small sample, it's like, okay, this guy absolutely has it. So I'm way in on Cole Emerson and very excited about his potential. And I think it is certainly there.
Obviously, you have Cruz staying in. Did Emerson at number one cross your mind at all or no?
Yeah, I did. I'm just a little more comfortable with Cruz being on a higher floor, being a college bat. No, I think that it certainly did, and something that I think is really possible. I think that we could be looking at the best prospect in baseball next year. And if Dylan Cruz graduates, then yeah, that certainly might be the case. But I was just, my comfortability with Cruz, seeing him longer, like having a much larger track record, more data samples, like it makes me believe that, okay, I'm much more confident there.
Yeah. And to point out, I would have Cruz number one as well. If I thought he was still going to be there next year, I would have him number one as well. But that's going to wrap us up. Quick recap here of the top 25s. For me, Leo DeVries, Harry Ford, Matt Horvath, Chase Burns, Robbie Song at 21. 20 through 16, Sebastian Walcott, Andrew Painter, Jet Williams, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Felton Celestin. 15 through 11, Noble Meyer, Max Clark, Roderick Arias, Travis Bezzana, and Paul Skeens. 10 through 6, Jackson Jobe, Colt Emerson, Lazaro Montes, Joandre Vargas, Nick Kurtz. 5 through 1, Brock Wilkin, Sammy Basalo, Adiel Amador, Roman Anthony, and Walker Jenkins. Chris, you want to recap your 25 through 1?
Yep, 25 is Yoelin Cespedes, 24 Dylan Beavers, 23 Eduardo Quintero, 22 Cooper Pratt, 21 Rainer Arias, 20 Adiel Amador, Jet Williams, Leo DeVries, Robert Kolas, and Cooper Pratt, 20 through 16. And I have Cooper Pratt on there twice. I just realized that.
I just realized that too.
I have no clue how I made a whole show and I had Cooper Pratt twice, but here we are.
Chris really likes Cooper Pratt.
Apparently so. Nice little blunder there, and maybe some people picked up on it before I did. But 15 through 11 is Andrew Painter, Felton Celestin, Max Clark, Emmanuel Rodriguez, and Chase Burns. And then 10 through 6, Roderick Arias, Yoenri Vargas, Nick Kurtz, Travis Bezzana, Samuel Basalo, and then the top five, 5 through 1, Ethan Salas, Roman Anthony, Walker Jenkins, Colt Emerson, and Dylan Cruz. And since I put Cooper Pratt twice, you get another name. And I will throw out a wild card of Wainer Luciano with Houston, who I really like a lot. So yeah, he's my wild card with Cooper Pratt on there twice.
Fun wild card to close out the show. I can't believe neither one of us caught that until the very last seconds of this podcast. But that will wrap us up. Thanks again to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We got two more episodes this week. Again, we're going three per week up into opening day, and then we'll be back down to two per week during the season. So we got a lot of fun topics to talk about, some guests lined up. It's going to be a fun next few weeks setting up the opening day, which is a month away. It's getting pretty close. It's glad to have baseball back. But we will be back with you again on Wednesday. But until then, everyone take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.